That's a piece for string orchestra called The Raw Heart of the Spinning World, performed live at Roulette as part of the next Festival of Emerging Artists. The piece is by composer and conductor Peter Askim, who is also the founder of the next Festival of Emerging Artists, among many other things. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and on the program today, my guest is Peter Askim. He's a composer, conductor, an incredible producer. He's built this extraordinary network for contemporary music and emerging artists across North Carolina, New York City, and beyond. Among his many titles are music director of the Wilmington Symphony Orchestra, artistic director and conductor of the Raleigh Civic Symphony and Chamber Orchestra, and director of orchestral activities at North Carolina State University. And he's done an amazing job of connecting all of these. At NC State and with the Raleigh Civic Symphony, he's built one of the most distinctive commissioning initiatives that I know of. It's called the NC State 10-Year Premier Project. And just in the last 10 years, the Raleigh Civic Symphony and Chamber Orchestra has premiered 42 new pieces. And this is community members alongside NC State students. So a really interesting mix of people coming together to premiere works by outstanding composers, many of whom are at the top of their career, some of whom are emerging. I mean, it's just this incredible network of people. Peter has a wonderful ability to connect all of these things together. And as I mentioned, he's also the founder of the next Festival of Emerging Artists. So he is a busy guy, and it's a real pleasure to have him on the program today. So I'll be talking with Peter about all this great work and featuring a handful of the pieces that have come out of these wonderful initiatives. And this is part one of a two-part series. So we will return and feature more great music that has come to life thanks to the efforts of Peter Askim.
I hear a lot of people that run orchestras or conducting orchestras say that, you know, they're making the orchestra work by doing a lot of film nights, by doing a lot of pops nights. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, when I think about all the people in the country who have never even heard an orchestra, period, I think, yeah, by all means. I mean, you know, let's definitely get them in front of the orchestra. But then, you know, I mean, the typical thought is you lure them in with John Williams, and then you hope you can get them to Mozart. And there's no talk about new music, new classical music. I mean, so what you're doing to me is pretty extraordinary. How are audiences responding? I mean, it seems like you're kind of turning that conventional wisdom on its head a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I would say I'm very privileged in that this is a kind of university, a research university setting. So my view of this project is it's like research. This is developing the field. We're not reliant on ticket income only to make the program work. So that's a real luxury. But that being said, I feel like it's always the new piece that people want to talk about. You know, it's always, that's always the most interesting thing. They might recognize Beethoven or they might recognize Mozart, but at the end of the concert, they always say, oh, you know, I'm not sure how I felt about that one, but it really made me think about things, or wow, that totally blew me away. I've never heard anything like that before. And I think it's due to a couple things. I'm really careful in how I choose the composers, really so that the orchestra will be able to dig in and sound good, that the audience will have kind of some way in with that composer. I do a lot of thematic programming, so putting those new pieces in the context of older pieces and in the context of a theme, you know, whether it's social justice or the environment or kind of historical events and anniversaries. So there's a way in which is not just only the music. And then also having the composers there is really important to see that these are real people writing real music and that the audience has really more in common with them than it does with somebody who died a couple hundred years ago. Even if the surface language is different, these are people who are writing music about the world that we all live in. So I think all of those things combined have earned me kind of a lot of trust with the audience locally to say, well, maybe I haven't heard of this, but I'm willing to take a chance on it.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think, you know, and commissioning especially, I think is exciting, you know, telling people you're the first people to hear this piece of
ever.
music, you know, and
Right.
yeah, and maybe you don't like it. That's okay. Okay, you know, there's lots of stuff I don't like, you know,
Right. Yeah.
but you know.
I think, yeah, that's true. I think that's a big part of it too, is just giving people, even giving the orchestra, the permission to not love everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, at ACM concerts, we try to ask two questions. One is, do you like it? That's a valid, you know, it's not a very interesting question, frankly, but it's a valid, you know, point. So you say, I don't really like this. You say, okay, all right, let's delve in deeper. The second question I want to ask is, I'm going to tell you what the composer is doing in the piece, you know, what their intention was. And now let's have a conversation about if you think that they achieved that intention. Because that's, you know, you can say, I didn't like that piece, but it's a successful piece because they achieved their intention, you know, which was to irritate me. No, I'm kidding, but, you know,
Well, sometimes, but that's okay.
well,
It's a
yeah,
valid intention.
right. It's out there. I mean, and you think about like Penderecki, you know, and like Threnody, you know, and
Right.
he called that piece something else, and I can't remember what it was, and it was totally
Right.
unsuccessful. And then he
Sure.
rebranded it as this, you know, heart-rending, anguished cry about the Holocaust, and people were
Right.
like, "Oh my God, that piece, you know, just hits me," you know.
Right.
So a lot of it is the
Exactly.
intention or the perceived intention of the piece.
Or even the framing of the piece.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. One thing that I try and do kind of in lieu of tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars of commission money, is try to make it something that's very useful for the composer. We try and get them a good recording, try and give them as much leeway as possible to write something that's going to help them. So for instance, I've done a lot of first orchestra pieces from composers who might have been kind of up and coming and successful in chamber music, but the big institutions hadn't given them the chance to write an orchestra piece yet. So, for instance, Alison Loggins Hall was, went on to become composer in residence with Cleveland Orchestra, but she wrote her first orchestra piece for us. my own path as a musician is forked and sorted. I began life as a bass player. I was an orchestral and jazz bass player, had an orchestra gig for a long time in Honolulu Symphony, but was always conducting and was always composing and always looking for opportunities to do a lot of new music. I came to North Carolina in 2014. I'm currently the director of orchestral studies at NC State University, where I conduct a couple orchestras, the Raleigh Civic Orchestras. Also, I am the founder and artistic director of the Next Festival of Emerging Artists, which is a summer festival for early career composers, choreographers, and performers. And just recently took over as music director of the Wilmington Symphony in Wilmington, North Carolina. So I came to NC State in 2014, and this is kind of a tech STEM school with the orchestras have kind of non-music majors and community members. And I've followed a predecessor who was really interested in 20th century music and did a lot of, you know, like a John Cage festival and Lou Harrison. And so was not starting cold with this, but as a composer and performer, I'm really interested in new music. So in 2015, I started doing a world premiere on every concert. So this year is the 10th year that we've been doing a world premiere commission piece on every orchestra concert that we do. So we do for a year in April, we're going to be doing our 42nd world premiere. And this is a great opportunity, I think, for people who are not in New York or LA or Chicago, people who are not like highly trained professional musicians to be a part of the creative process and to work with composers who are, you know, Oscar, Emmy, Grammy, Pulitzer composers writing great music and be part of that creation process. So that's what I've tried to do is kind of match the artist to the orchestra and the project and make it something that's helpful for them in their development or their career or in their imagination.
Yeah, it's such a problem in this country, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, for myself as a composer as well, I mean, right. You know, but when Relevant Tones was a radio show, we were traveling to all these festivals and you'd go to Finland, you'd go to China, you'd go to these countries and composers, you know, in the very beginning of their career would hand you a CD, you know, we did CDs at that time, that was full of orchestra music. And I'm like, what?
Right.
You're just starting your career. And they're like, oh yeah, the orchestras all play our music here, you know?
Exactly.
Like you're a student, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's almost impossible.
Exactly. So I've kind of tried to step into that gap of what I saw, you know, is trying to help composers through that stage of their careers, you know, because pretty much nobody will program you until they can hear something that they think that they're going to get if they commission you or program you. So that recording is important.
Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, it's amazing that you're taking a chance on these composers because, you know, you can say like cellist for Kronos Quartet, and I think a lot of people will know what that is. But most of the time when you say these names, there's not going to spark anything for the average attendee. You know, so there is there's an element of risk there. I mean, you know, and I love it.
Right.
You are saying like, trust me, I've done my homework. Mm-hmm. I've listened to their stuff. I you know, I'm listening to their chamber music, but I have reason to believe that they'll write an effective orchestra piece. And that's, I found it to be very interesting, that trust between you and the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I take it seriously. You know, I don't program things that I don't really believe are worth hearing. Not guaranteeing that people will like it. That's not enough. That's a whole nother thing altogether, but that are worth listening. It's worth their time. It'll give you something to think about. It might be something you haven't heard before or make you think in a different way. Yeah.
It's such a delicate conversation in a way, because it's easy to talk about music as art and sound like a jerk, you know? And none of us wants to sound like that, but this is an art form. I mean, you know, what we're
It
doing,
is.
what the composers are doing is art, every bit as much as what you see in a contemporary museum. And that's always something I want audiences to know. You know, again, going back to that, you may not like this, but that's okay because you don't like everything you see in a museum. You don't like everything, you know, you don't like every movie you see. You know, I mean, if you liked every movie you saw last year, then you're not seeing enough movies. I mean, that's, you
Exactly, exactly,
know.
exactly. And you know, a little bit, that's what I tell the orchestra and kind of what I hint to the audience is if you like everything that we do, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah. And that's
You
okay.
know?
I mean, again,
And that's okay, right?
because it's art, you know, like, I mean,
Right.
it's so funny to me when people say, you know, they're so selective about what they will and won't go and see, you know.
Right.
And I get it. If it's a 5-hour opera, you kind of want to make sure you're going to like it because that's a lot of time,
Sure.
you know,
Right.
or if it's a
Right.
$300 ticket, you know, like I
Right,
get that.
right. Or if you're
But it,
paying like $100 for a babysitter, you know, or, you know, whatever.
exactly, right. But
Right.
if it's relatively accessible, you know, I mean, I think what we need to do in our field is encourage people to take chances with classical music the same way they take chances with the other arts.
Right. Right. I totally agree.
when people go to the museum, you know, if you go to a you know the modern wing of in Chicago, or you go to MoMA, you know, they're it's interesting. If you go and see Picasso, you're thinking to yourself, these are masterpieces. These are the masterpieces that have stood the test of time, you know? But if you go to MoMA, you just go, oh, I hate that. And you feel so free to say that because it's new, you know? Or I love that. Oh, that really speaks to me. But nobody's worried about masterpieces. But in classical music, we still hang that masterpiece tag on everybody. And it's kind of, it's a real, you know, say, this doesn't hold up next to Mozart or next to Beethoven. Well, that's not the intention. It's not meant to. I mean, don't frame it that way, you know, like that bothers me sometimes, you know, or though they do the same thing with musicians, you know, oh, well, he's no prodigy, you know, and you're like, well, he's 50, so how would you even know, you know, and I mean, I've heard people say things like that, and it's just like that's we hem ourselves in with classical music when we're always talking about the you know, that these players are the best players in the world, or that these pieces are the best pieces in the world, then you say, well, then everything else must be garbage. And that really, really messes us up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that makes me think of two things. Well, first is I'm still holding on to my dream that I'm going to be a child prodigy. I feel like it's just not, it's never too late. So, but also, you know, as somebody who I conduct all kinds of music, you know, I mean, that's part of each one of my positions has a different blend of all those ingredients. I also think it's a disservice to Beethoven. Because, you know, when you put it up on a pedestal, like you're just supposed to admire this thing, like that's like delicate and perfect. And no, look, Beethoven was making people angry left and right. And this is music of like profound human emotion, which is not tied up in a little bow. So I think it does everybody a disservice to kind of make it into masterworks. I hate that word.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's terrible. It's terrible. Makes you think of masterpiece theater, you know, or just this
That's
kind of,
right.
and that goes back to
Welcome.
exactly, which goes back to, you know, when you want to talk about art music, you sound like that, and people are like, you know, oh, that's horrible. It's very off-putting. I'm like, no, it's not. It shouldn't be. Like, I want to talk about this, you know, in a way that is conducive to talking about it as an art form without sounding like masterpiece theater, you know.
You know, I just did a program where I took a big chance, but I think it really worked. So I did a program with Wilmington Symphony where it was kind of based on things that are broken and heal. So there was a local artist who passed away about a year ago who's a Japanese ceramicist. And the idea of kintsugi is a Japanese pottery that's broken shards that are fused together with gold. And so I programmed this along that line of things that are broken but are more beautiful in the way that they heal. And it was a program of Beethoven, a New Zealand composer named Selina Fisher, who has a piece called Kintsugi, a piece by Michael Dudley, who's a composer, jazz trumpet player who's in Brooklyn now, and then also a local singer-songwriter named Tift Merritt, who had done a lot of work in the archives of a local psychiatric institution. And, you know, there was Beethoven, there was kind of Americana, there was kind of sound art, and then just a totally gorgeous romantic lyrical string piece. And I think that it was one of the most powerful and successful programs I've done because of the way that everything shared that thread through. And it didn't do Beethoven the disservice of saying, like, this is the thing that you're supposed to like. This was Beethoven who was going deaf and struggling, and it was the Creatures of Prometheus, which is about the creation of mankind from fire and clay. And then we go to pottery, which is about the creation of, you know, human art form through fire and clay, and taking people through that way. And so I don't know, that's just something that I try to think about, that kind of framing where these four composers from very different times and spaces and genres can really speak to each other.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a really good theme. I like that a lot. Well, let's talk about the 10-year premiere project. I think that's a really sweeping, big initiative.
Yeah, so this is 10 years of a world premiere commission on every program. And it sort of started unintentionally. I know a lot of composers. I'm a composer. Let's do a piece by this person or that person. And then almost by accident, I realized, hey, this is like we've been doing this for a few years now. Maybe this is what we're supposed to be doing. We're at a research institution. We're furthering knowledge, we're developing the field, we're exploring language, we're cultivating new ideas. And so then it just sort of got momentum. And here we are, the 10th year of this through the pandemic. In fact, the pandemic was one of the most productive times for this project. I commissioned nine pieces during the pandemic. And in that time in particular, it was how do we solve the problem of latency and the fact that we're not all there? And so I chose a bunch of different composers that had totally different solutions to it. Most of which, almost all of which, were not the like people playing the click track in boxes on Zoom. But trying to find new voices, trying to find things that are relevant, trying to find composers who have something to say and maybe haven't been asked to say it. Or been given the palette of an orchestra to say it, and it's pretty. I'm particularly proud that two-thirds of the composers are, composers who come from quote unquote underserved or historically underrepresented groups. Everybody comes from their own sound world and brings their own background, and more than just like I need to commission X. I'm like, what do these people have to say? In, what is this composer's life experience lead them to communicate? What kind of language are they going to speak if they can write for an orchestra? So that's how it's kind of come to that. It's also that was almost retrospective, like looking back, like, oh, we've had a lot of composers from different genres and backgrounds. We've had a Hawaiian slack key guitarist. We've had people who come out of the classical tradition, but we've come had people who come out of rock and roll and punk rock tradition, and I just find that super interesting, the voices.
I know some of you, and suddenly all over, we get weary. I know that. Somebody's asking here tonight, how long will it take to solve this problem? How long will prejudice blind the visions of men, darken their understanding, drive bright-eyed wisdom from her sacred throne? Somebody's asking tonight, when will wounded justice be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men? When will the radiant star of hope be plunged against the nocturnal bosom of this lonely night and plucked from weary souls the manacles of fear and the chains of death? How long, somebody's asking, will justice be crucified and truth be buried? How long do we have to struggle in order to get those rights which are basic, God-given rights, deep down in the constitution of this nation? And I can only say to you tonight, not long. I do not know the date, but I read a few lines in history, and it tells us a story that has great moral implications, and that is a checkpoint in the universe, and that evil may occupy the throne for a day. But ultimately, it must give way to the powerful forces of justice and goodness. It tells us in our own Christian faith that evil may so shape events that Caesar will occupy the palace and Christ the cross. But one day, that same Christ will rise up and split history into AD and BC, so that even the life of Caesar must be dated by his name. It tells us a story, not long. How long, how long? That is the story of my faith.
and be the price of blood to make a nation. For every day the freedom mighty supply the toll.
But there's a destination not easy.
Thank you.
That was Sinfonietta of Dreams, Movement 3 by Jeff Scott. And before that, we heard Nowruz for Orchestra by Adelia Fazulina. And those are both premieres, of course, by the Raleigh Civic Orchestras as part of this wonderful project I've been talking with composer and conductor Peter Askim about. We have time for one more piece, so let's go out with a piece called Webbings and Circles by Nari Soul. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of integrating musical creativity into everyday life. Find out more about ACM's programs at acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening to part one of my interview with Peter Askim, featuring all the wonderful things that he's doing in North Carolina and beyond. And I hope you'll tune in to part two. And now let's hear Nari Soul introduce her piece, Webbings and Circles, and then we'll hear a performance of it by the Raleigh Civic Orchestras with Peter Askim conducting.
My name is Nari Soul. I'd love to introduce my pieces and share with you all a little bit about the process of putting all of this together. There are two miniatures. One is called Circles and the other is called Webbings. And they both draw from similar sources of inspiration. One being visuals provided by my friend Ben Levin, who animated a lot of abstract lines and shapes and images related to things like water and waves and different shapes. Also, I have been influenced by pointillism, how many different dots or many different strokes can come together and create a different texture and a larger image. And I really leaned into these concepts because they really fit the set of circumstances we were all in terms of how we were going to put this together. We were all working virtually, we were all remote, therefore the communication, although Zoom meetings are quite effective, there is always a delay. Everyone is not experiencing rehearsals collectively. We decided to record all the parts separately, and no one was able to really experience playing with each other until afterwards. So there's this delay, and also I needed to find room to just embrace the individuality of each member, but also bring it together in a way that makes sense as a whole. So a lot of these concepts I communicated openly with all of the musicians, and the piece itself morphed from rehearsal to rehearsal and from version to version. We also experimented with different forms of notation and different amounts of freedom given to the musicians in terms of how much they are able to improvise, in what way they're improvising, and how much choice they have. So with all of this being in the picture, I felt that we were able to experiment with things that are not really practical in the traditional settings of working with an orchestra. And in that way, I felt that we were just really able to embrace our set of unique circumstances and still be able to create unique, meaningful, and beautiful music. And I thank everyone for participating and being open-minded about all of this. I hope you enjoy.